This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow the Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mario, you wake up, you're hungry, you walk to the kitchen to breakfast, you decide that you want cereal and milk. Which order are those two items being added to the bowl?
I don't think I've had cereal, by the way, in like 8 years, but I would go cereal, then milk.
Okay, so you're normal. Thank you. That's all I needed to know. Yeah. We had a listener.
Who's doing milk first?
We had a listener text the show a little while ago to say that his wife eats a bite of cereal and then takes a sip of milk to mix them together. She doesn't pour the milk in the cereal or the cereal in the milk, which again, Zoe and I are both put the cereal in the bowl, then pour the milk. It's been kind of a heated debate this AM, but one texter texted earlier and said his wife takes a bite of the cereal dry and then takes a sip of the milk and mixes them together manually. And I've never been so confused and irrationally angry in my life.
That's like if you're eating chicken wings and you just take a bite of the wing and then a shot of the sauce.
Yeah.
You just mix it in your mouth.
Yeah. Why? I just don't understand. Ladies and gentlemen.
Wait, that was just an example. You haven't seen anyone do that, right?
I've never seen anyone do that, okay, but that's kind of fun. Right.
You'd call them out on the spot if it happened, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, would you? I mean, if this
I
is.
Would.
Yeah.
Even if you didn't know them?
Yeah.
Would you? So
yeah.
You walk to another table. This goes for you, too, Rob.
I'd be friendly about it, but I would.
Would you?
Yeah, I'd be friendly about it.
I'd be like, who the heck are you? Get away from me.
I'm going to live your life, do it the best, do whatever you want to do the way you want to do it. With limited exceptions, and this is one.
Yeah, but you don't come to my table and tell me how to eat.
Every time I eat with my nieces and nephews, I have a thing about ketchup. And every time they have fries or anything, I take the ketchup and I throw it under the table. I go, you're not having ketchup. I can't do it. This is going to gross me out.
Tyrant.
All right, that one's too far. Yeah. You've made it weird now.
It's not
too
your
far.
Kids.
Really?
Yeah.
That's where you draw the line.
You just threw a child's ketchup on the floor, Mario. Yes, that's too far. How do you not see that?
I don't care. It grosses me out. I need to eat too. Kids should be seen, not heard.
All right. This is very, very Rob Brown of me to say maybe someday you won't sit at the kids' table and you won't have this problem.
Wow.
All right. I feel bad. I felt bad, but you know, some things you can't pass up.
I walked into that one.
You did. When you walk into one so hard that even Lonzo kicks the legs out from under you, it's pretty bad. Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm going away now. I can't.
The executive producer of BetMGM tonight, which you can hear on this and find Odyssey stations nationwide every weekday evening from 7 until 11 p.m. He is also an NBA, NFL, and apparently arbiter of how children are allowed to eat for the BetMGM Network. Hayton Ass, Mario Herron joining us here on the show. Did you get a chance, Mario, to check out any of the 60-minute interview of LeBron James with Pat McAfee yesterday, specifically the clip? And I'm actually going to, you know what, I'm actually going to play it for you, where LeBron insinuated something very interesting. So I could be misreading this. I'm not, but I could be. LeBron James just insinuating that the NBA rigs drafts to make sure that high-level players end up in particular markets where they want them to be. Didn't just say it about himself, did it about Derrick Rose in Chicago. I brought up some other examples. New Orleans loses Chris Paul. They have a 4% chance to win the lottery with Anthony Davis the next year. They do it. Happens again a few years later with Big Z Zion Williamson. The Orlando Magic one year were 41-41. And ended up with the number one overall pick so that Shaq could have a guard play with him the next year. This, to me, even though it was kind of like a throwaway 45-second soundbite off the Pat McAfee show, this, to me, is like the worst thing that's happened to the NBA in a very long time.
It's a tough look. I had made a joke to someone last night about it, saying if this was David Stern, there'd be like a target on LeBron for like 2 months because he'd be like, what are you doing? You know, I'm so he's like, I'm just going to let this slide. But no, it's something that we've seen multiple times. Like, I will even go to Wemby, Rob. Like, Wemby just so happens that he's going to the Spurs, where Greg Popovich has this pipeline to France, where Boris Diaw, who still works very closely with the Spurs, where Tony Parker, like, the connections go on and on. And you're like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Now, were they terrible? Yeah, they're absolutely brutal. When, you know, Chicago got Derrick Rose, the chances of them getting, I believe, was like insanely low percentage of them getting Derrick Rose, and then they get him. Cleveland, they get LeBron here. Patrick Ewing with the Knicks was another one that I believe they use as an example. The thing that just kind of makes me laugh with it is, like, of all the organizations we're trying to really pump up in the NBA, it's the Cleveland Cavaliers, like that market, because it's just such a big market that we need to fill.
I mean, listen, I think you got to know, like, LeBron James, by being LeBron James and the hype he brought to the league, was going to sell a gazillion dollars in jerseys no matter what team he ended up on. But you know, if he ends up in Cleveland, everybody in Cleveland, Ohio is going to buy merch. That team's selling out, as well as selling out on the road and all that.
Untapped market.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to put the most heralded athlete in the history of Cleveland, Ohio, onto the Cleveland team. Joey B says it does go all the way back to the cold envelope conspiracy, so the Knicks could get Patrick Ewing from up there on the northeast coastline. Like, on one hand, it's one of those conspiracies, Mario, that it's like, I don't believe it, but also there's just enough that I'm like, yeah, I mean, I guess. And now we have the most popular, notorious, recognizable athlete maybe on the face of the planet insinuating that it's true.
Well, on top of all those things as well, is he was an 18-year-old going into the NBA that's supposed to be, is given the nickname Chosen One. What's the easiest way to kind of bring him into the association? Keep him at home, right? Yeah. Like, let's not have him go to New York. Let's not have him go to Denver, go to Detroit, where it's a very unknown area where things can kind of go wrong. Like, he's still in a very controlled environment, close to family, close to friends. That's probably also played a factor in whatever this was. And look, I mean, I'm a Bulls fan. It got me Derrick Rose. It got me life. It got me joy. I'm fine with it. If this is what the NBA is doing, okay.
I guess that's kind of the conversation, though, because all of us watch sports to be entertained. That's why we love this. It entertains us. And we're all entertained by different aspects of it. Some of us by the stats, some of us by the execution, some of us by the feats of raw athletic power, whatever the case might be. I did a whole segment on the quadrilateral of excellence, the trapezoid of excellence, earlier in the show, because I love the math nerd side of this stuff. This would be, if it is true, this would be a conspiracy that the NBA would utilize to make the game entertaining. And I would argue it's successful. Ewing as a Knick moves the needle more than Ewing as a Piston. LeBron as a Cavalier moves the needle more than LeBron as a Buck. I mean, it would be something that makes sense in the grand scheme of things to entertain us more. But at the same time, part of the entertainment for all of us is that we believe, even if we are fans of crappy small market teams, that one day we'll have a chance. One day we'll get a shot. And if you're telling me that, you've got to have a perfect storm of circumstances for the NBA to pull your envelope intentionally to give you that guy. If you're a fan of a team that's like never any good, why the hell would I watch anymore?
Yeah, I see both sides of it. But here's the thing that the NBA also tried to do, like with the lottery, though, is to try to like to stop the tanking. Is try to stop like, hey, let's rest these guys the last 12 games of the year. And has it worked to the level that it should? Maybe or maybe not. I'd say it. But the lottery does give variation. It gives luck. It gives not a 100% certainty that you're gonna get the first pick and you're gonna get Cooper Flagg. Like, if you, because of this, Rob, who would you bet out of these bottom teams right now in the NBA is most likely to land Cooper Flagg then, the number one pick? Like, which team makes the most sense for the NBA to go, you should be on this team with this market because this is untapped. This is going to help grow the game. This is going to help jersey sales because sure as hell not the Wizards.
Charlotte.
Sure as hell not the Hornets.
Why not Charlotte? He's playing in Duke. I mean,
I don't think they would do it. If LaMelo Ball, if they can't market that well, I don't think they're going to. I mean, you got Brandon Miller. If you can't get that going with that marketing, I don't know if Cooper Flagg's going to really just do it for you. I think Brooklyn.
I do too. I think Brooklyn. I mean, I guess I could maybe make an argument for. I can maybe make an argument. Okay. All right. You ready? Here's my conspiracy theory.
Yeah. I have another team too after you.
Hear me out.
Let's hear it.
Dallas did what the NBA wanted, and their reward is the number one overall pick, and the Mavs get him.
That would be that's a David.
If Dallas
Stern,
gets the number one overall pick, the conspiracy theory officially has legs in my mind.
Yeah, officially has legs.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Nancy Mario.
And Danny Ainge would have a panic attack. I also last team to throw in there, Trailblazers.
That was going to be the other one I was going to say.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. That was going to be the other one.
Yeah. That's, I think basketball that could be king there.
All right, so that was interesting. There were a couple of other clips from that interview that I saw. And again, these aren't necessarily things that I think are like massively important to the NBA, the other side of it. But when LeBron says it and it gets a little heated, it's interesting. He talked about two media personalities. Number one, he talked about Stephen A. Smith. And he was like, oh, this guy's having a field day. He's probably sitting in his whitey tighties on his recliner eating ice cream, just overjoyed about the fact that I'm talking about him again. And then he went on and he talked smack about Brian Windhorst, whose entire career was built on the fact that he went to high school with LeBron James, and they're best buddies. And LeBron was like, yeah, I saw Wendy on the show the other day talking like we're best friends. These bleeps are weird. Like, I saw that, and I don't really have a reaction to it other than that's interesting.
I saw it as a certain network is getting kind of what it deserves for how they've covered him a lot.
That's probably fair, which only makes it interesting because McAfee's show is on that certain network, which makes this more fun to me.
Well, supposedly they're at odds. I mean, I'm talking about McAfee and Stephen A. Smith. It's about who can
Stephen
get the
A.
most
Smith
money
wins
and all that
odds
kind of
with
stuff.
Everybody. That's his entire shtick.
I know.
I do think Stephen A., you know, I'm happy for him. I think he's obviously like incredibly talented and deserves everything he's getting. But we shouldn't, when there's a playoff game and it's in New York, we shouldn't treat Stephen A. Smith like he's starting in the game. You know what I mean?
I really don't need the fit walkout from Stephen A. Smith. I don't.
Yeah.
For just the record, I do want to be clear about one thing, though. Like, this whole thing between LeBron and Stephen A. Smith I found interesting because, like, everybody wanted to pile on LeBron. Like, oh, your kid's in the league. He's going to get criticized as every other player. But, like, Stephen A. Smith was going on the whole thing about, oh, he's only in the league because of LeBron. He's only here because he's a James. And I'm like, quick, name me any other 55th overall pick that's even ever made the league, right? Just name me one. This kid, when he got a chance to actually play, when he got like a 13-minute game, he went in there for 13 points on like 52% shooting with a handful of boards and assists too. Like, the kid can play. I'm not saying he's LeBron, but the kid can play. I kind of was Team LeBron on that whole thing, to be honest.
Here's where I stood with it all. It's a 55th pick. Who the hell cares? Like, you know,
it's fair.
It's not like you're using the first pick. You're not using a top 10 pick. It's the 55th pick, and your best player on your team is asking for you to use it for on his son. Just say yes.
See,
who the hell cares?
See, the three of us agree on that. And I don't know anyone who doesn't other than certain people on TV.
Sure.
Yeah, and I do get the other, like, obviously the last name James helps. But honestly, when does that not help in any other type of industry? If your dad is the best of the best in a certain type of industry, and you're going into that said industry, guess what? Things are going to be a little bit easier for you. It's just life. It's just the world. Like, congratulations.
Sure.
Some people are born with a step forward, and you're born with a step back. That's life.
I have asked people that have gotten heated about this, name me any other draft pick, pick 45 or below. Just name me one. Just name me one. Because if you're mad about that, you're mad about nepotism, you're mad about Bronny James getting a shot, and you believe he's only got drafted because his dad is LeBron, which, spoiler alert, no, he's a good basketball player. Name me any other pick from 45 down that you think is worse off because of Bronny. You can't do it. He in fact, I could be honest, if I'm looking at the names, I could have made an argument for Bronny James to go as high as 43, which is right behind KJ Simpson, who I would have probably picked ahead of Bronny. I think he could have picked at 43, and this would have made sense. Now, if you wanted to be mad, what you could be mad about is that maybe a bunch of teams that were drafted around 43 down, maybe they passed on drafting Bronny at a spot they thought he would have been worth value so he could fall to the Lakers. That would be fine, but then you got to prove that's what happened, and you never will.
Also, this draft class was beyond bad.
It wasn't a good draft class. You're right.
So it doesn't. So even if you ask any executive, like, in the second round, would you draft Bronny? I honestly, if we're cutting the crap, I bet most of them would say they wouldn't. But they're like, the draft class was so bad, who cares? Like, there was no one looking going, we just found a dime. We just found Draymond Green. No one was saying that.
Nope.
Everyone was like, these are G League guys.
Yeah.
Summer League guys.
Yeah. You're picking a bunch of G League guys, hoping one of them develops into a crown jewel, right? Like, that's it. A diamond in the rough. All right, real quick before we let you go here, Mario, got a minute or two left. Give me your Sweet 16 picks for the next couple of nights. Who are we riding with?
Oh, man. So, obviously, the Bama-Alabama over. I mean, Bama-Alabama. BYU-Alabama over 175.5.
That's a big number, dude.
And I'm making out with it, baby. Let's
I don't hate it. I think it's honestly, I think it's a race to 90.
I think it is, too. And I think you could get OT in this game. Like, I think it's going to be really, really tight, especially with the way Bama's been playing with their food and giving chances for teams to kind of win in every single matchup. I think that's going to be an overtime game that can kind of help you get that over. Florida, Maryland, I just kind of want to watch. I think Florida is by far the best team in the country now. I think that test against UConn was a great one, and that game looked like the whole time they were going to lose it. And the next thing you know, it's under a minute left, and they somehow pull it out and win. That shows that you're a title contender. So I'm curious how that goes. Maryland's bench is not the best, but that starting five, all averaging 12 or more points, is kind of scary. Arizona Duke's probably one of my favorite. I actually like Duke to cover, but don't tell anyone in my family. Also, if you think Arizona's going to win, love over 17.5 points, I would take, because in the wins he has against Duke, he averages more than 20 points a game. So go ahead and take Arizona to cover if you think so, along with the Caleb Love over 17.5 points, because both those things have to happen in order for Arizona to pull out a win. He has to be Superman, and if, in case you guys haven't watched him play before, he thinks he's Superman. There's not a shot he doesn't love. It's like Kobe Bryant on steroids. Kobe Bryant, like, before Shaq yelled at him and tried to beat him up. Then the other one I like a lot, I love Ole Miss. I love it. And I know there's things that point towards Michigan State being the best defense in the country and defending the three, you know, Izzo. But Ole Miss is hot. Ole Miss doesn't turn the basketball over. Ole Miss is very well coached. Those three things win you in March.
And they are disruptive. Michigan State feels like a team that if you disrupt the offense, they kind of start to like back down into iso ball. I will take Ole Miss over any team who tries to make it a game full of one-on-ones.
Exactly. And, yeah. And my last thing, it's in Indiana. That crowd is going to be black and gold all around that stadium. Purdue +8.5. Way to really get after a very good defensive team, have dominant guard play. Brandon Allen's one of the best guards in all of college basketball. And guess where he's from? Indianapolis, baby.
I have the Purdue money line. 2-1.
Let's go.
Please and thank
Let's
you.
Let's go.
Indianapolis, Indiana, the like 16th best host city in America, hosting the Sweet 16.
I tell you this though, the Purdue and IU fans, when they get a home game, they get after it. They're going to be in your face.
Oh, I have a thing for you. Next September, September 26th, I got a buddy who's getting married in Indianapolis. I'm going for the first time. I am putting everything you've ever told me to the test.
Okay.
I think it's going to be overrated as hell.
Hey, are you going to go see the Sirs?
That's still a common theme. That's still, people say Sirs.
Yeah, I'm sure people who think it's okay to say Sirs. Shocking, I know. No, Mario. Right. No.
Go to St. Elmo's when you're there.
Stop trying to make fetch a thing, Gretchen. You don't get that reference, do you?
Nope.
That's right hating ass Mario. Mario Heron.
Yeah, I don't get it either, so we're good. Man. Yeah.
Mean Girls!
Sounds like it's not a good reference.
Mean Girls!
Okay. Did you think I'd get a Mean Girls reference? Yeah. Did you really think that?
I think every American should get a Mean Girls reference.
Really?
Yeah, it's a great movie. Great movie.
I can't even tell you the cast.
Lindsay Lohan, she's amazing. Hating ass Mario, Mario Heron, executive producer of BetMGM Tonight, which you can hear on this and every other fine Odyssey station from 7 to 11 p.m. nationwide, joins us every Thursday at 9:15. Have a mediocre rest of your day, buddy.
I hope you have a fantastic rest of your day.
Thanks,
because
pal.
I don't hold grudges.
Back after this, the Rob Brown Show, the Fan Upstate.
Welcome into the Fight Club, or as we have come to know it,
The Rob Brown Show Daily.
No, the John Cena segment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the John Cena segment. There's other stuff to talk about, and we will, but it's the John Cena segment because it's just, he puts on a masterclass every time he's on the microphone, and this is no different. Although, John Cena in the latest promo from Monday Night Raw, he went somewhere where you're not supposed to go. He went to the forbidden territory. He went somewhere where people don't talk about it. They don't say it. He didn't say the name, but he wooed. He talked about limousine riding. He talked about jet flying.
He did say the name.
Did he say Ric Flair?
Yeah, he said Ric Flair.
Maybe I missed that part. Wow.
Yeah, he said his name.
I just sit there like, oh, really? Because that's taboo that you don't really talk about that. I was so happy that he did that. I mean, because he is each week finding a way to show heels how to be a real heel. I mean, this is how you do it, and also how to work a crowd. He's still one of the best of all time at working a crowd, and it's really, really good. The fact that he said he's going to win the championship and then he's taking it home. He brought up the spinner belt and how people complained. They said it was too much like a toy. And then
No. What he said was, and I love this, I loved it. He said, I took the most prestigious thing in wrestling. That championship belt is supposed to be an icon of everything that is great, historic, perfect about wrestling. And I turned it into a toy and you losers ate it up. He said, you guys loved that belt and I made it a gimmick. I made it a toy and you cared more about the toy than you cared about the history and the legacy of that belt. And here's the thing. He's right again. That's why this heel run's incredible. He's right again.
But here's the thing. He's already the greatest champion in the history of WWE. We've had this argument before. He is. All his championships have happened in WWE, whereas Ric Flair has had championships in other places. John Cena has only been there for his championships. Unless, I don't know if he won. He was in FCW, which is still technically WWE.
I don't feel crazy compelled to, like, compare the great champions of all time.
Wow, talk down voice.
I don't feel compelled to compare. I don't feel compelled.
By the way, that's your normal voice, the thing you just did there.
I don't feel compelled to debate the legacy of the great championships of bygone eras. I don't. To me, there's a reason Ric Flair is what Ric Flair is. There's a reason John Cena is what John Cena is. I never liked him as a face. I thought he was boring. I thought he overacted, whatever. I love him as a heel because he's taken all those things that people loved about him. And he's, you got to stop. I'm about to sue you for slander. All right? That's not true.
Has that ever been done? I wonder, is it two people on a radio show?
I know, you keep saying that. We're going to find out. We're going to find out.
At least you didn't threaten to fight me. Because that would have been so much like a couple years ago.
No, I'm not doing that. The 40-year streak of not getting punched in the face, I'd like to keep intact.
Tell me I'm going to bleep and do what you say and act like you're going to come across the board. Nah. Do that.
I think that the reason this heel turn, I said this on Tuesday night on BetMGM tonight because I made them talk about wrestling. I forgot to ask Mario about that. The reason this is so compelling is because the points that he's making, more than the points here, when he was the face and he's like, I know, if you just keep grinding with hustle, loyalty, and respect, you'll always win. It's like, no, you won't, buddy. The real world doesn't work that way. There's a lot of times you can do everything right and work as hard as you want, and you just can't do a thing. That's the real world.
Sounds like some people's radio careers.
Sure. I have grinded and put in the work and done plenty of 8 and 12-hour broadcasting days, also that I've become the number one sports talk radio host in New Orleans, Louisiana. It still hadn't happened. I'm not saying it never will. I've been at it for 17 years, and I haven't gotten it there.
I was talking about me, but that's okay.
But I mean, I make everything about me because that's the ego.
I know.
The point here is, all that stuff, the reason I like it is because the super goody two-shoes, everything's always great as long as you work hard, kids. Like, that's not how the real world works. The stuff he's saying now as a heel is, he is. He did take a legacy belt, a belt that has gotten years and years and years of the greatest champions of this art form that we love attached to it, and he put a spinner on the front and made it a toy, and it was the highest selling belt of all time. He's right. It's also great.
He's also money. And he's been money. Once he got going, he's been money. He's a guy. Who's the greatest champion of all time? I know you said, you know, is it Flair, is it Cena, or is it Roman Reigns? Because, you know, during the Bloodline run, they made a point to point out that Roman Reigns is the longest reigning champion.
Yeah, that's all,
well,
all
that kind of
fine.
Stuff.
The answer is either Flair or Cena. And I think you're going to find two things. Number one, I think you're going to find a generational divide. I think you're going to find, more often than not, the older the person you're talking to, the more they're going to say Ric Flair, with some who say Cena. And the younger the people are, they're going to say John Cena, with some who are going to say Ric Flair. I don't necessarily feel the need to compare and contrast the two of them.
Someone would say like Harley Race or something.
Sure,
like
and yeah, you may find some real old guys that are going to throw like the old territorial champs in there, and
Bruno,
that's fine.
San Martino,
hell yeah,
is better than any of these
One
guys.
Of the GOATs of all time, for sure. There are probably some classics that you will see, but I think the answer is ordinarily going to come down to one of these two guys. Here's the reality. The reason I think that is true is because John Cena was a wrestler who was crafted to be sold to the children of wrestling fans to give them a like super positive, this is the guy you look up to thing. And for 20 years, that was the character he portrayed. So a heel turn, it's not just a heel turn, it's a heel turn away from 20 years of being the guy that a parent would hand design to be their kid's role model into this guy who's insulting kids versus Ric Flair, who was the exact opposite. He's the guy you'd hand design to go, don't ever try to be like that guy. Don't try to be that guy.
Flair said he's going to be there. And could you do me a favor? Could you put that down? Because you'd be really mad if you're being really animated if you drop the tablet
of
truth.
I own this, so I'm going to be very careful with mine.
I'm trying to help you look out for you. That's all. All right. The next thing is Stephanie Vaquer is, not only is she double champ, she defended on NXT. I still say one of the best wrestling shows out there right now, NXT, twice Tuesday. She's a double champ, and she actually defended the belt twice, as they pointed out. It's never been done defensive-wise.
Here's the thing.
And I know Julia apparently not only could be hurt, but is having visa problems.
I have one and only one major issue that is starting to become more resolved consistently. More consistently for WWE. This company refuses to acknowledge its own history, good, bad, ugly, and different. Mandy Rose was double champ and did defend those two belts multiple times.
Well,
so she's the first to defend, that's not true.
That's been refuted because one of those belts was dissolved and it was.
That's fine, but yeah, she held him and she defended him. So that's,
you know,
not true.
I've interviewed Mandy Rose before.
I'm defending Mandy Rose.
And she's not. No, it's Stephanie Vaquer.
Listen. Yeah. I love Stephanie Vaquer. Clearly, I got my reasons for doing so. Okay.
I hate you that you can do that and I can't do that.
And number two,
if you roll your R's, you're my enemy. Anyone listening right now, if you can roll your R's, we're enemies.
I roll my R's for a reason with Stephanie Vaquer. Okay. I'm a fan for obvious reasons, as is Booker T. But
Chilean women, I didn't know.
But
now I know.
The things she's doing are things that Mandy Rose did. They just don't want to talk about Mandy Rose because of what Mandy Rose decided to do
as a
career instead.
She's a much better wrestler than Mandy Rose.
I don't disagree with you, but it doesn't diminish the fact that that happened and they refuse to, they're like pretending that it doesn't. That being said, homegirl can go. Just go ahead and put her on the main roster now because they need it.
All right.
Just send her up now.
No, I completely agree. All right. Speaking of agreeance, we haven't really been in agreeance in hardly anything today except for cereal. And so I'm sure we both will absolutely agree on this next thing. El Grande Americano should be celebrated as a hero. I mean, he was an American luchador. He went away for a while. He disappeared because of controversy. He's come back. He's come back stronger. And he's an amazing wrestler. Got a victory over Dragon Lee on Monday night. And because Chad Gable, turns out, I don't know why they have anything to do with each other, but Chad Gable was sick and couldn't compete.
He had a doctor's note.
Yeah, he did.
For sure.
So El Grande Americano is Rey Mysterio. It's him. Maybe a couple other luchas that are my favorite of all time. But he's got a chance to be my favorite lucha
of
all time.
The guy's been wrestling in the territories around the Gulf of America since the 1980s.
I can't believe they found that footage. It's really
unbelievable.
Good footage.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. They were able to find footage of the Gulf of America maps from back in the 1700s. It's pretty spectacular, to be honest with you. Like, what a deep dive through history to find that. But I will say this, I very clearly and definitely remember seeing El Grande Americano like a lot of years ago as a young man. Like, I very much remember seeing him.
I think
him.
I saw him in Pickens one time during the downtime.
Yeah, I saw him at a couple of regional territory shows down in Pensacola back when I was a kid. A Grande Americano, like, just an absolute legend in the luchador game. Absolutely impeccable, untouchable, elite history. And I look forward to seeing his illustrious history continue on this WWE run, to the point that, honestly, I think Chad Gable should manage him. I think you should send them both out to the ring at the same time. I think you should send him and Gable out. Let Gable kind of show him the ropes of top-notch corporate wrestling while he continues to be the incredible luchador that he is. If you send both those guys out to the ring at the same time, I think you'd have an untouchable team.
I agree with you.
Two definitely different guys that could work really well together.
All right, a couple other things really quick. Rey Fénix and Aleister Black are returning. I'm going to go with Aleister because I'm guessing he'll come back as Aleister Black to the WWE. Also rumors, Paige is done with AEW. Miro is done with AEW, that they may be coming back. Is this too much, and will this filter into TNA? Because that's my theory, is that some of these guys will filter and girls will filter into TNA.
Well, I think you kind of have a three-tier system now. I think, like, TNA is the training ground for NXT, is the training ground for WWE. And you have TNA and NXT that kind of work with each other for some, like, spring training style games before you send people up. But here's the thing, all the guys that you just mentioned, all the guys and gals that you just mentioned, they're all longtime vets. We're not talking about like somebody who like cut his teeth in AEW and is young and needs to be groomed. These are all people who were in. Rusev had the best WrestleMania entrance of all time. He came in on a tank. It's the greatest thing I've ever seen, right? This guy gets it. He's a showman. He understands. Malakai Black, a.k.a. Aleister Black, when he came up on the like rising grave thing amongst the candles, as a metalhead, that's one of my favorite wrestling intros, like just show-to-show intros of all time. All these people have all of that experience. They could all go right up to the top. My question is, where do they fit in with everything right now? Because my problem isn't they're moving from AEW to WWE. There are some people who are going to fit better with the WWE style, and like Swerve Strickland. Swerve Strickland going to AEW is the greatest thing that's ever happened to his career. Could he come back and bring that character to WWE and succeed? I don't know is the answer.
Well, he's already got beef with Booker T, so I don't know. Booker T got a lot of pull.
Absolutely. So. I don't know is the answer. What I do know is this. There is a saturation point for WWE. With as many hours of weekly program as they have, there is a saturation point where you go, as good as you are, we can't fit anybody else. Because you also, and this is the part that it's for wrestling fans, it's kind of hard to understand. You always have to leave space on the main roster for your next crop of superstars to have their chance, or else you don't get a Bron Breakker, who, by the way, is wildly entertaining right now. You don't get those guys. So there's a saturation point, and I do get concerned that with AEW struggling the way it is and all these guys and gals wanting to come back and move back over, there comes a point where even the WWE has to go, we don't have the room anymore.
Okay, one last thing before we go to break. Monday at 1 p.m., we are going to be interviewing my favorite wrestler of all time, and that would be Sting. We'll be playing it back on Tuesday. My son asked me yesterday, are you nervous? It's like, I'm starting to get there. I am starting to get there. This is one of those where you think, all right, if I ever had a chance in my life, I'm sure Rob has a list. I have a list of people that I would, and interviewing terrifies me. But if I ever had a chance to talk to this person, this guy is near the top of the list for me. So I cannot wait till Monday. And, dude, we're going to get to interview Sting.
Yeah.
I'm very nervous about
Absolute
that.
Absolute icon. One of, you know, we talked about greatest champs ever. I'm going to say this. If we put together the Mount Rushmore of influential wrestlers, I'm talking wrestlers who kind of went past the world of wrestling and became household. Sting's on that list. I would say Hogan's on that list, as much as I don't like him. Hogan's on that list. I would say Flair is on that list. There are some guys that are super, like, I don't think Bret Hart's on that list. As good as he was, I don't think he's on that list. I think Undertaker's on that list. And I think Sting's on that list, honestly. One of the greatest of all time. We will interview Sting Monday afternoon and, fingers crossed, be able to play that back for you on Tuesday. Stick around. Texter said, no, y'all both wrong. Goldberg is the greatest of all time. No.
Did he say Goldberg? Maybe you read it wrong.
Back after this, wrapping up the Rob Brown Show next on the Fan Upstate. Wrapping up the show, the Rob Brown Show is right here on the Fan Upstate. Rob the Great One, Lonzo, and you. You know what? I've just been calling people out on the show today, so why not keep it up?
No. Whatever that thing you didn't take this morning, take it tomorrow, okay?
Lonzo, I'm going to do one more call out, and I think that it is a call out that you will agree with me on. I'm not even going to set it up. I'm just going to play the audio.
That's the funniest thing I've ever heard, I think. Oh, by the way, ESPN, big time, even I saw earlier their morning show, I forget who it is now, are all defending what a great guy Stephen A. Smith is and all this stuff. It's like, why are you defending all that? I mean, LeBron destroyed him. He did. And now his immediate thing is, well, I would have fought him. That's how he comes back. Can't nobody believe you threw a punch on LeBron James.
Okay. Let me get into some stuff here. Number one, I've been in this game for 17 years. And while some people's style of broadcasting, I actively, internally, personally dislike, 92.5% of the time, I don't directly call it out. Until you become a liar, I will call that out. Some people don't like that. Some people will start beef with me. But when you actively become a liar, that's where you get the call out. If you are massaging the truth, or maybe getting into deep speculation and labeling it as such, I don't love it, but okay. It's when you say, this is a thing that definitely happened. And it's like, is it, or is it just something you're saying definitely happened so you can get a bunch of attention on the internet? That's where you lose me. I'm not a Stephen A. Smith guy. And my reasoning for why is, respectfully, I don't think Stephen A. Smith is like a particularly bright sports mind. Neither am I, for the record. I understand. I know ball, and I know that's kind of been the running gag on the show for a very long time. But like, I don't claim to be a wizard. I don't claim to be able to look and see things that a lot of people don't see. I just have way a lot of time to watch and analyze. I have more time to evaluate and learn and recognize than most normal people do. That's why I know ball. Steven, I don't think it's a particularly bright mind when it comes to, and I know that sounds bad, but again, I'm not a particularly bright mind. Like there are people who, I've got the only comparison I can give you, the lead singer in my band, Great One, is one of these guys that can like listen to a song and then just play it, right, on a guitar. I hate that guy.
Yeah, I hate that guy, but I also love that guy.
He's my best friend in the world.
I mean, if he's in your band, you also love the guy.
Hate that guy. Love that guy. He's my best friend in the world, and I hate him because he can just listen to a song and play it. There are some people that are like that with sports. They are savant. They are able to listen, or they're able to watch a sport, and they're able to immediately go, here's what they're doing, here's the scheme, here's the taxes, X's, O's, whatever. Whereas I got to watch film. I got to watch a game a time, two, three times. I got to take notes. If you come over to the house tonight, you will find tomorrow when I come in here, the tablet of truth will have a scrolling amount of notes from the four Final Four or Sweet 16 games tonight, so I can talk about them tomorrow. Same on Saturday, same on et cetera, et cetera. I don't think Stephen A. Smith necessarily does all that. I think he just kind of has hot takes, and then he makes himself the center of attention. And again, he's built a career on which he has the access to do that. I don't fault him for that. Stephen A. Smith is the definition of hate the game, not the player. I don't like the game. That game, that element of the game, bothers me. To me, and I've said this before, it's not new, that kind of sports broadcasting is wildly frustrating to me because it keeps a lot of people who are entertaining and no ball down. They can't surpass that. But at the same time, as I have said, y'all click on it. Y'all watch it. Y'all listen to it. Y'all follow it. And if that's what America wants, that's what America gets. Every time I get on the internet and I see people complaining about the decline of ESPN, the fact that we used to wake up in the morning and we would all of us put on SportsCenter and we would watch 30 minutes of SportsCenter while we were getting ready for school, getting ready for work, whatever. And now when you wake up and tune it on, what do you have? Any given minute, you have three people and a camera fighting with each other about whatever. Discuss and debate. I want SportsCenter back, but I also tell people, we as Americans, FAFO'd, all right? We started allowing the debate thing to be the thing that we follow the most, and it gave rise to people like Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith, et cetera, et cetera. All of that aside, Stephen A. Smith dropping that line. Listen, for the record,
you know those things where they put the hand, the taller guy puts his hand on the guy's head, and the guy's just swinging away.
LeBron James is not dumb. He's not going to walk over and put his hands on Stephen A. Smith. He doesn't need to. He doesn't have to. There's no reason for him to do that because he knows he would beat Stephen A. Smith's ass. This is the definition of when your little buddy friend, of which I've got a couple, and I don't mean to be mean when I call them that, but why is it always them that want to take their shirt off and fight first in the bar? You're like, dude, you're going to get your ass kicked.
Yeah, there's one of those.
And I'm not helping you.
One of those in every group. We, a couple groups growing up, and there was always that guy.
It's always that guy. Stephen A. Smith, if LeBron put his hands on you, you would not have the time to swing at him. It would be the old two hits. He hits you, you hit floor. There would be no time for you to swing on a 40-year-old athlete who looks like he's 26, who is jacked beyond belief, and Pat McAfee believes probably spends $10 million a year being the prototype of health. The man's sculpted like a Greek god, Stephen. I've seen you throw punches, bud. Relax.
I also just want to say LeBron's probably got a couple guys in the crowd wherever he goes. You throw a punch, those guys are probably taking you out.
Dude, LeBron James probably had 15 people within 10 feet of Stephen A. Smith, all undercover, that were all like,
Yeah.
Stephen, do it, Stephen. Do it.
I've always wanted to punch that guy. James says, better hold me back. Yeah, it's that guy. Better hold me back. All right, the first thing that's Xing is nose wipe.
CeeDee Lamb over the past couple of years has developed this touchdown celebration that he does where he we're gonna say wipes his nose. Now it insinuates a certain thing, and if you don't know what that thing is, good kids, stay in school, okay? The NFL is looking at potentially banning that celebration. Obviously, it wouldn't
I
be the first celebration.
They did.
Did they officially do it?
I believe they did, yeah. I don't think I've seen it. CeeDee Lamb plays for Dallas, right?
He does.
That's probably why I've never seen it.
He does.
That's probably why. All right, the next thing that's Xing is Halle Berry.
Halle Berry said, did she have her name on a chair yesterday?
No, and that's why she's Xing.
I am simply going to say, when I was like 27, I saw swordfish. Halle Berry, go to war. We'd send all, she was Helen of Troy.
She also does, she doesn't age, really.
She doesn't. She doesn't. She is the definition of black don't crack. That woman is beautiful.
I think the last movie that I saw that she was in was probably the John Wick one she was in. She was amazing.
I don't think she has to do movies anymore. All of that being said, Halle Berry played Storm in the old sequence of X-Men movies. They have brought back a lot of the original actors. I think Kelsey Grammer's name was on a chair, too, if I recall correctly.
Well, yeah, he was.
He played Beast.
But Robert has said that they're not done yet. So maybe there's another video of a bunch of chairs.
Halle Berry, please come back. Are you kidding me?
Because Chris Pratt wasn't on there. Spider-Man wasn't on there. I mean, there's some, I mean, yeah.
There was also a little bit of controversy because all of the Thunderbolts were on there, except there was one name that was missing. And it's like, oh, so you've just told us who lives and dies in the Thunderbolts
movie.
Yeah,
it was, what's her name? The one from Black Widow.
Taskmaster. Well, knockoff dollar store Taskmaster.
Yeah, it was her.
Which I'm interested in because obviously.
I'm still going to go see Thunderbolts anyway. 100%. It doesn't matter.
100%. I'm more excited about Thunderbolts than I've been for anything that Marvel's done probably since Endgame. Are you kidding me? I can't wait.
All right.
David Harbour's amazing.
Yeah, I love David Harbour. Someone who's going to be at South Carolina Comic-Con April 5th and 6th.
Sting!
No, oh. But he is going to be there, but only on the 6th. Giancarlo Esposito.
Oh, I don't know why he's trending, but if he is trending, it means we are about to get something incredible with another incredible bad guy.
Oh, dude, you're going to like this. It's all over the place. He wants to play Mr. Freeze.
Yes, please. Yes, please. Yes, please. All right, listen, don't get me wrong. We all, America as a whole, we all have a soft spot in our heart for Arnold's Mr. Freeze. Tonight's forecast. A deep freeze. We all have a soft spot for that. But if you're an OG Batman fan, you know
one
that
Victor. One of your best ones, by the way.
Thank you very much. Really Victor Freeze is meant to be a very melancholy, sad, depressed. He's fighting to save his wife. That's the whole premise behind the character. Esposito would make that character terrifying, and I'm here for it.
All right.
Here for it.
All right. One last thing other than Wendy. I just want to say that again. It's so funny.
LeBron was cooking yesterday.
The Ark of the Covenant.
I got no idea. Just tell me.
According to reports, the CIA knows where the Ark of the Covenant is, and they've known for a very long time, and there are actually pictures. And whether you believe what it supposedly does, it doesn't mean that the actual thing doesn't exist, and apparently it does. Stop all your skepticism.
Skepticism.
Oh, you're being skeptical about the CIA. I get it.
No, I'm being skeptical. By the way, the whole underground chambers under the pyramids thing we were talking about a week ago, InfoWars. It's InfoWars losers getting attention. InfoWars are losers. I said what I said.
Okay, whatever, dude.
Thanks, Brian. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow, maybe, if I don't get fired to do it all over again, but better. For Lonzo, I'm Rob. See you back here on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.